Radio Prague News.
The police have charged Social Democrat MP and Central Bohemian Governor David Rath with corruption. In related news, senior officials from the Social Democrats have called on David Rath to resign from all his posts and discontinue his membership in the party. According to fresh data from Eurostat, the Czech economy's growth rate ranks among the worst of the 19 EU countries surveyed. Police on Tuesday charged Social Democrat MP and Central Bohemian Governor David Rath with corruption. The police were able to charge the governor unusually quickly due to the fact that he was caught in the act, which gives prosecutors the chance to circumvent a law on MP immunity, under which the chair of the lower house of parliament first has to give their approval for the criminal prosecution of an MP to go ahead. According to some sources, Mr. Rath was arrested with a large sum of money on his person on Monday night. Along with the MP and governor, seven other people were arrested. The regional prosecutor said they were suspected of damaging the EU's financial interests, bribery, and corruption. The news website Idnes.cz reported the arrests were linked to an investigation of public procurements paid for by EU funds. Commenting on the arrest of David Rath, the Social Democrats' leader Bohuslav Sobotka on Tuesday said that the governor and MP should resign from all his posts and discontinue his membership in the party. He added that Mr. Rath should refrain from running for a political post in the upcoming regional elections set to take place in the fall. The deputy leader of the Social Democrats, Jiří Dienstbier, who is the party's official candidate for the presidential race, on Tuesday also said that should the corruption charges against MP and Governor David Rath prove to be true, Mr. Rath should resign from all his posts. The Czech economy's growth rate in the first quarter of 2012 ranks among the worst within the EU, according to fresh data from Eurostat. The Czech Republic came in second to last, with only Hungary having a worse rate of growth. In the first 3 months of 2012, the Czech economy shrank by 1% GDP. However, Eurostat's new data did not include 8 of the union's 27 member states. Among those not included in the newest figures was debt-ridden Greece. Overall, the economy in the EU in the first quarter of 2012 grew by 0.1% year-on-year, while it stagnated in the eurozone. The trial of two men who are charged with brutally murdering a 77-year-old pensioner opened at a regional court in Uský nad Labem on Tuesday. The two men, aged 21 and 59, are suspected of having beaten their victim to the point that he suffocated. The incident took place last May in a small village in the Polabí region. If found guilty, the two defendants could face prison sentences of up to 20 years. A Czech citizen has been sentenced to 5 years in prison by a French court for driving under the influence of marijuana and causing a traffic accident last March in which 3 people were killed. The car crash happened near Paris in the city Conflans. The 43-year-old driver failed to notice a traffic jam and crashed into the car in front of him. 3 people were killed, 4 injured, one of them seriously. The driver was speeding and police found high level of marijuana in his system. And now let's take a brief look at the weather. The next days bring moderate conditions with some clouds and daytime highs between 15 and 20 degrees Celsius. My name is Sarah Barufka, and this brings us to the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. I'm Jan Richter. Coming up in today's show, Social Democrat MP and one of the party's prominent figures, David Rath, has been arrested on corruption charges. Then, Czech investors who lost millions to controversial businessman Viktor Kožený in the 1990s have a good chance of getting some of their money back. And later, in this edition of Spotlight, we visit the South Bohemian town of Nepomuk. All that and more coming up, so please stay with us. One of the most prominent figures of the opposition Social Democratic Party, Member of Parliament and Central Bohemian Governor David Rath, has been charged with corruption. Mr. Rath was arrested on Monday night along with seven other people in a large-scale police operation that is believed to be linked to abuse of EU funds. Daniela Lazarova has the details.
The arrest of Governor David Rath exploded like a bombshell on the Czech political scene in the early hours of Tuesday. News of his detention first appeared on the internet news site IDNES and was quickly confirmed by his office spokeswoman Beryl Mašeková.
I can confirm that at this moment the police are searching the governor's office. Mr. Rath himself remains in detention and has issued a brief statement saying that he believes the police action to be politically motivated in the interest of politically destroying him and damaging the party ahead of the autumn elections. The governor says that in order to protect his party, he is prepared to resign from all his posts and will discuss the matter with Social Democrat leader Bohuslav Sobotka as soon as he is released.
Although the police remain tight-lipped about the case, regional state attorney Lenka Bradáčová told the news site IDNES that Mr. Rath and the remaining seven people had been detained in connection with harming the financial interests of the European Union, giving and taking bribes and manipulating a public tender. The news site quotes another anonymous source as saying the case is linked to EU subsidies for a hospital in central Bohemia. Leaders of the opposition Social Democratic Party expressed shock over the reports. Jan Hamáček, a colleague MP for central Bohemia, had this to say.
It is surprising and in a way shocking, and obviously we expect that the police will explain what are the reasons for detaining the governor and other people, and obviously should at the end this proven to be true. We have also in the past always said that those who are accused of such things should immediately resign all their functions.
Under Czech legislation, David Rath's parliamentary immunity would have protected him from being arrested and charged, but an article of the law provides an exception in cases where a culprit is caught red-handed. According to the news server Česká pozice, Mr. Rath was arrested in the street shortly after accepting a 7 million crown bribe and had the money in his possession when the police detained him. The Speaker of the Lower House, Miroslava Němcová, on Tuesday confirmed having received a late-night call from the police and having given them preliminary approval to proceed with the case. At its next session, the Lower House should take a vote on stripping David Rath of his immunity. Social Democrat leader Bohuslav Sobotka says that the party will not try to shield Mr. Rath from criminal prosecution.
On principle, the Social Democrats in both houses of parliament open the way for prosecution when such cases arise. Deciding on someone's innocence or guilt is not in the competence of the lower or upper chamber. It will be left to the court to decide on whether Mr. Rath is innocent or guilty of the charges pressed against him.
If David Rath is tried and found guilty of the said charges, he could face up to 12 years in prison.
Daniela Lazarová with that report. The Czech police seem to be more active now in investigating corruption at long last. What do you think? Let us know. One long-running case the police have not been able to crack so far is that of the runaway businessman Viktor Kožený, who in the 1990s made off with millions of investors' money. But now Czech shareholders have a strong chance of getting back partial compensation. There is a new possibility that the equivalent of around half a billion crowns gained from the sale of Mr. Kožený's Aspen home in the United States could be transferred to the Czech Republic. Shareholders now have 10 days in which to file a formal request. Jan Wellinger has the details.
Few in the Czech Republic have forgotten the name of Viktor Kožený, the businessman turned fugitive whose long-defunct Harvard funds once promised the sky to potential investors. During privatization in the Czech Republic in the 1990s, thousands signed their voucher books over to Harvard, confident they would see high returns. It turned out to be little more than fantasy. Instead of taking care of investors, Harvard funds bought shares in companies, stripped assets and transferred money to offshore tax havens. Mr. Kojeni himself, earning the nickname Pirate of Prague, eventually gained Irish citizenship and relocated to the Bahamas, well beyond the reach of the Czech legal system. In July 2010, he, along with a business partner, was sentenced in absentia to 10 years in prison for causing billions of crowns in damages. The rulings were hardly a cause for worry for either man. Both appealed the decision, and the matter will only be decided this autumn by the Prague High Court, more than 2 years later. There is, however, a strong chance that some Czechs at least could see partial compensation. After Mr. Kojeni's extradition from the Bahamas to the U.S. in connection with another highly publicized case was denied earlier this year, U.S. officials contacted their Czech counterparts about funds gained from the sale of Kojeni's Aspen villa. Namely, the money could be transferred to the Czech Republic rather than being returned to its former owner. In this way, Czech shareholders ripped off by the financier in the 1990s could get at least something back. Zdeněk Častoral is the bankruptcy administrator for Harvard Industrial Holdings.
As the firm's bankruptcy administrator, it is my task to see the return of funds that were siphoned off so that they can be properly divided under bankruptcy proceedings. This is a role that my colleagues and I have not only in the Czech Republic, but also in numerous countries abroad. We, of course, followed the U.S. case very closely, and when it failed regarding the Aspen property, we received an invitation to respond, to put forward a legal request for the funds to be frozen so that they could eventually be returned to Harvard Industrial Holdings.
According to Mr. Častoral, there is a strong chance the funds will be returned, doubts over the ownership of the Aspen villa notwithstanding. The mountain chalet, once apparently used by Mr. Kojeni to sign deals, is reportedly in his mother's name. But there is enough evidence, the bankruptcy administrator says, to prove beyond a doubt the Aspen address was his. Mr. Častoral also told Radio Prague that the official request would be put forward within the 10-day limit. Here's what he said.
We got the information and material in advance and were able to prepare the request. We will certainly be able to put it forward by the 10-day deadline or earlier. As for ownership of the villa, this will depend on the court, but we have enough evidence that the property was without a doubt Mr. Kojeni's. It should be possible to ask for the funds to be transferred as compensation.
As for Viktor Kojeni himself, while the British Privy Council rejected his extradition to the U.S., there is still a slim chance a Czech request, dating all the way back to 2005, could one day be successful. The conventional wisdom is that the U.S. request needed to be decided first. Closer on the Czech request, however, could similarly take years.
Thank you, Jan Wallinger, for that. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Coming up next in this edition of Spotlight, Christian Falvey visits the South Bohemian town of Nepomuk.
If there were a capital city of legendary in the Czech Republic, the town of Nepomuk would be a hot contestant for the honor. There are said to be graves that glow when someone's about to die, a landscape littered with the petrified cattle of a greedy pagan, and the ghost of an evil musketeer who walks the earth with the still ferocious specter of his dog. The official population of Nepomuk may be only 3,700, but that's only if you count the living. For all the legends, historical events, and other things of interest surrounding the southwest Bohemian town, the first question I had when I came to Nepomuk was how it got its, for me, rather odd name, a question to which Jana Benediktova of the Municipal Museum had an immediate, if rather prosaic, answer.
There were originally two settlements near where the town stands today, Pomuk and Přesanice, both of which were historically tied to the nearby Cistercian monastery that was founded in 1144. In order to differentiate the settlement around the monastery from the village of Pomuk, people started to call it Nepomuk or Not Pomuk, and in 1413 these three settlements were chartered as the town of Nepomuk by Charles IV.
Král Václav IV. Povýšil Nepomuk na město.
Most of the people around the world who know of Nepomuk know it from the name of its most famous son, St. John of Nepomuk, and there is no small number of such people. From Australia to Latin America, there are schools, people, and towns named after the man, called by some the most famous Czech. So what is he so famous for? Well, should you find yourself drowning, you should know. He is the patron saint of water calamities, among other things. And the town of Nepomuk was where he began life as Jan Velflin, the son of a local bailiff. The parish priest, Father Vítězslav Holý, told me the story.
Svatý Jan Nepomucký se tady v Nepomuku.
St. John was born here in Nepomuk in 1340 or around that year, and he was schooled in the nearby monastery. He then left to go to Charles University, where he began studying law and held his first job as a local notary. He proved to be a very good student, and he was able to go to study in the Italian city of Padua. When he returned as a young doctor of law, he became the right-hand man, vicar general of Archbishop Jan of Jenštejn.
On tedy na to místo nastupuje.
In spite of his auspicious start, John's promotion found him in the middle of a vicious dispute between the archbishop and the emperor, Václav IV. It was a classic case of greedy king versus God-fearing clergyman, in which, as usual, there was no small role played by international affairs and local power struggles. Václav, it seems, was anxiously awaiting the death of a sickly old abbot so as to gain the riches of his particularly wealthy abbey, and he was foiled by none other than John, who promptly replaced the dead abbot with the archbishop's nominee.
So the king was furious. He went after the archbishop in Prague's Lesser Quarter, but since it's easier to arrest a vicar than an archbishop, that's what he did. John was tortured, and perhaps because he was of a weaker constitution, it killed him. The legends say that the king himself took part in the torture. He had the body thrown from Charles Bridge, hoping the episode would end as the water engulfed him. But the opposite happened. John's body stayed atop the water for maybe a week, with five stars or an aura of light around him.
And such was the end of John Velflin, but merely the beginning of St. John of Nepomuk, whose image adorns many a bridge around the world, including the one he was thrown from. His was the first statue on Charles Bridge, and its bronze plaques are rubbed clean thanks to a tradition that touching them brings good luck. Were it not for St. John, though, the town of Nepomuk would still be well known for the seemingly endless source of legend and historical interest that is the chateau on Zelená Hora. The name of Zelená Hora, or Green Mountain, predates St. John by hundreds of years, beginning with a legend that even he surely knew regarding another Czech saint. In the church of St. Vojtěch at the top of the mountain, I met the local chronicler Božena Rotová.
Pro neschody z církví tady u nás odešel opakovaně do kláštera Benediktínů do Říma.
Saint Vojtěch left this country due to disagreements with the church here, and he lived with the Benedictine monks in Rome. He returned in 992 with a group of Benedictines and passed this hill, which was then a bare rock. According to the legend, a nobleman turned hermit called Břímota lived here on the bare rock, and Saint Vojtěch stayed here with him for a while. It was a time of terrible drought, and standing at that hollowed-out stone there to the right of the altar, Saint Vojtěch blessed the land. He asked heaven for rain, and rain came so heavily that the whole mountain and region turned green, which is why it is called Green Mountain.
Celý okolí i skála, proto se to jmenuje Zelená hora.
Another explanation would be that the hill is covered in evergreens and hence the name, but believe what you like. On the site there was a watchtower, around the tower was built a fort, and from the fort was built a castle, and so on until the present day and the 100-room chateau that's seen from far away on top of its very green pedestal. Volumes have been written about Green Mountain. It stood against the fearsome Hussites and the terrible one-eyed military genius Žižka, who burnt the cloister to the ground. A group of Catholic lords met here to overthrow the great Czech king George of Poděbrady. Emperors were housed here, St. Václav's crown was hidden here, and the Red Bridge in Nepomuk saw so much blood and battle that it said the cries and shrieks of the soldiers still hang in the air in the evenings. Naturally, just about everything in the area of Nepomuk relates to Green Mountain in some way or another. take the popular local surname Netušil, which loosely translates as had no idea. Before you take pity on Mr. or Mrs. Had No Idea, listen to the tale of how they got the name and the legend of the first upwards water duct in Europe.
Přišel mlynář Jakub od někud.
Once a miller named Jakub came here from some faraway place and wanted to put the old cloister mill back in order. He was a very talented miller, but for all his good qualities, he had one great vice, and that was that he was an incorrigible poacher. Time and time again, he was punished for shooting the master's animals, but in the end, there was nothing left but to hang him. So Jakub asked to show that he was worth more alive than dead, and he made a promise that within 1 year he would bring the water from the mill to the castle, which until then had to be hauled up the hill. He managed to do it using wooden pipes that, through some clever process, brought the water to the castle cistern. And the lord of the castle said he had no idea that he had such clever people amongst his subjects.
Mezi svými podanými má tak šikovní lidi.
Of all the historical events in which Green Mountain features, arguably the most important was the finding of the Green Mountain manuscript in the early 19th century, which also began the most intense debate in the history of Czech literature. The manuscript appeared at the start of the National Revival, when Czech nationalists were struggling to save their identity from the Germanization policies of the Austrian monarchy. Jiří Urban of the Czech Society of Manuscripts has been studying the Green Mountain manuscript all his life.
The manuscript essentially deals with a dispute between two brothers, but it illustrates a democratic system that it says existed in our nation at the time. The princess Libuša is featured in it as well. An important aspect of it was that it showed a high literary quality for the period and at an important time. It helped when nationalists were looking for such things, and it played a huge role in their efforts, becoming a source of inspiration for many Czech artists. Everyone knows Smetana's opera Libuša, for example, which was inspired by the Green Mountain manuscript.
Je inspirovaná právě Zelenhorským rukopisem.
Written on pieces of 9th century parchment, the manuscript would be the oldest testament of Czech writing, that is, if it were real. Popular consensus, however, is that it is not. The 19th century Slavic philologist and nationalist Václav Hanka, it seems, had the skill and the motive to make the manuscript. If he did, though, he did it so well that the debate is still raging today.
Já osobně a kolegové z rukopisné společnosti pokládáme.
I personally consider the manuscript to be authentic, as do my colleagues. We base that opinion on chemical and other analyses that have been backed up by modern studies made by criminologists and philologists. Those who contest the manuscript's authenticity largely base their criticism on the original 19th century arguments against it. But there's one thing that people on both sides of the debate agree on, that the manuscript's impact on the National Revival was enormous. There's no question about that.
If Hanka did forge the manuscripts, he certainly chose the right place to ascribe its finding to. It's entirely fitting that such a remarkable document would be discovered at Green Mountain, with all its wondrous legend and fantasy. A good time to enjoy that special atmosphere is right now, while the chateau is being gradually renovated and its ancient nooks and crannies are open to wandering about and wondering at history.
Christian Falvey with that edition of Spotlight, which was first broadcast in September 2009. And now we round up our regular weekday program with our popular miniseries ABC of Czech.
Ahoy!
Hello, and welcome to Radio Prague's special language program, ABC of Czech. I'm Heather Baun, and
Martin Mikule
is in the studio with me. Today we're looking at how to write home in Czech, even for those of us who write home in English. Post office in Czech is
pošta,
which is from the Latin positus, and certainly resembles what we use in English, but is easier to remember if you know the French la poste or the Spanish la posta. In Czech, you don't go to the post office, but on the post office.
Na poštu.
Once you're at the post office, you probably want to send
poslat
either a letter
Dopis.
Or a package.
Balík.
In the Czech Republic, they can be pretty strict about the weight.
Váha.
Of your letter.
Dopis.
And may not sell you a stamp.
Známka.
Without first weighing your letter. But you can usually find a stamp.
Známka.
At a.
Trafika.
A tobacconist. To send a postcard.
Pohled.
Transatlantic, it costs 12 Czech crowns. A letter will cost between 14 and 26 Czech crowns, depending on its exact weight. You can find a mailbox.
Poštovní schránka.
Just about anywhere. They are smallish orange boxes. But for many of us, the days of real letters, or snail mail, are long behind us. So what about in today's age of technology? For email, Czechs say...
E-mail.
And to send an email is...
E-mailovat.
Though that can be considered pretty colloquial. To send an email, you can also say...
Odeslat elektronickou poštu.
The verb...
Odeslat.
Has various usages in Czech. It means to send, but it also means to transmit and to dispatch. But back to emailing, or...
E-mailování.
You might be surprised to learn that the Czech post office...
Česká pošta.
...is up to date with technology. Many of the post offices in the Czech Republic also have internet stations. If you're particularly into post services and you're visiting the Czech Republic, there are two post museums here, one in Prague...
Praha.
...and one in...
Vyšší Brod.
By the way, Prague's network of post offices is linked by a 100-year-old...
Potrubní pošta.
A pneumatic system of pipes that enables messages to be sent between the different offices. We're just about out of time for today. By the way, we'd love to hear your thoughts and comments on ABC of Czech. If you have a moment, send us an email or a letter. Thanks for listening. Until next time.
Naschledanou.
That edition of ABC of Czech was the final part of our English language program today. We, as always, love to hear from you, so if you have any comments or any questions, do get in touch. You can write us a letter to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague to the Czech Republic, or send an email to english@radio.cz. But for now, from myself, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.